Welcome one and all to episode 390 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we welcome back Jeremy Weltman. He's in the UK and he's one of the most frequent concert goers that I know. He goes to shows all the time. We're going to talk about what shows we've seen collectively so far this year. We're going to talk about shows that we're going to be seeing and others that are being talked about online.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
I do want to thank you for joining me today for this episode, joining us because Jeremy is on the show as well. I've seen a lot of bigger shows mention this. I say this all the time now, and maybe I don't say it enough. I do appreciate that you listen to the show, that, let's be honest, between streaming and TV and sports and other podcasts and big name podcasters and blah, 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 blah. I thank you for listening to this episode, for taking time out to support the show by listening to it, by downloading it in some cases. We've seen an uptick of people going to the website and listening to the shows right there, which is awesome. I do appreciate you sending traffic my way on the site. If you do follow us on social media, please share the episodes with your friends. Follow the show itself if you're so inclined. On all the major podcasting platforms, there's also the video version of these shows where you can see us discuss these various topics as well. And we're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, and what else are we on? X and a bunch of other things, Telegram, so on and so forth. That's all on the website as well. There's various podcasting 2.0 apps that we use. And I do another show on Patreon. It is the Victor M. Ruiz podcast. And that show, interestingly enough, I do it when I can. I try to make it weekly, but I have been away at various basketball tournaments and basketball camps. And I've been doing kind of catch up and just doing shows to meet up with some of the weeks that I missed. So this past week, I released an episode talking about, I'm recording this. I recorded it this past weekend, but it was released several weeks before this episode drops. How about that? Anyway, so I did an episode just talking about the various basketball stuff, did another one talking about music news, another music-related topics. And then I did another one where I talk about 10 songs on random from a playlist, which people seem to enjoy. The atmosphere on Patreon is troll-free. You can get on there for as little as $2 a month. And I do post videos where we chat about those videos, post different questions as well, and polls and different things. I do want to get more involved and bring back some things that I've done in the past on Patreon. For those that don't know, I mean, I'm recording these episodes in advance because I am going to be away for some time for the first time in a really long time. So I do want to make sure that there are podcast episodes available of this show. So, yeah. So anyway, signalsfrommars.com. You can pretty much keep up with anything regarding the podcast there. I do want to send a shout out to my patrons. Real quickly, Stephen Saylor, Stephen Hoker, Jeremy Weltman, Mike Jones, Brad Dahl, Gabriel Ruiz, Chris Vaglio, Jose Ruiz, Metal Dan, Johan Edstrom, Ed Ferguson, Anthony Mackey, Tony Espin, Chris Sinzak, and Sean Richman. What a cast, what a cavalcade of characters from all around the world. I do appreciate your help. Become another one on the list. Become another supporter. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Welcome one and all to another episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today is Mr. Jeremy Weltman. Jeremy, how are you?
Hi, Victor. Yeah, doing really well, thanks. We've got a lovely summer's day here, or summer's evening, as you can probably just see from behind me. So, yeah, doing good. What about yourself?
I'm doing good as well. Very interesting that you have the double-pronged attack there of Judas Priest and Iron Maiden going on. two bands that we've discussed recently on the show, whether it comes to the Sphere in Las Vegas, whether it comes to concert touring. I mean, there's been so much talked about in the past about getting these two bands to tour with one another once again. That said, let's talk about some shows that we've seen this year already. And maybe towards the end of the show, we can talk about things that we'd like to see. So, Jeremy, what are some of the actual concerts that you've been able to see this year?
Okay, yeah, well, I'll actually probably come to Judas Priest in a moment because they were one of the bands that I did see in back in March. But we'll take February first because that was my first concert of the year. I went down to Manchester Academy. I went to Manchester Academy 3, which is quite a very, you know, quite a small venue, really. I would think no more than 400 or 500 people in there at any one time. But the amount of people that were actually in there for this show, probably less than 100. So it was a very, very small gig. But there were four great bands on. It was a new wave of British heavy metal night. So there was four bands. There was Girls' School, Alcatraz, Raven, and Air Force. Air Force are Doug Sampson's band, who obviously likes to talk up his contribution to Iron Maiden at some point. but anyway, I'll take you through the bands. Air Force were on first. Obviously, they were the support band, and they were really, really good. They were a proper new wave of British heavy metal band. They played that sort of style. They played a lot of sort of military-based music, you know, with those sort of themes. There were chunky riffs, and they had a really, really good vocalist who sounded really like Bruce. In fact, I sort of I saw him in the toilets after the gig, you know, in between the bands, and I said to him, you know, you're going to be the guy who replaces Bruce when it comes down to it. If he ever leaves Iron Maiden and they want to carry on, you're the guy,
right?
And he looked at me as if to, you know, I was on a different planet, but you know. I think he liked the compliment. He was a Portuguese guy, actually, very young, whereas the rest of the band were, you know, were quite old. So anyway, they were on first, and they got off the gig off to a really good start. I quite enjoyed their stuff. And then the next band on was Alcatraz, because the other three bands were rotating who was going to be the headliners. So they sort of they drew lots each night to decide what was going to happen. So Alcatraz were on next, and they were very, very classy. I mean, Joe Stump was amazing on guitar. Really amazing to see him. I was very close to watching what he was doing. And in between the acts, all the bands sort of mingled with the very small crowd. So you got a chance to sort of, you know, say hello or get your merchandise signed. Really nice thing to do. Alcatraz played all their sort of stuff off the last two albums. And Doogie White was on form. I mean, he was really interacting very well with the crowd. He was walking around as well all the time and talking to people. And they seemed to really enjoy it. You know, they really enjoyed the gig. And then after them, Raven came on. I've seen Raven before, and they're the favorite band of mine. And they were amazing. Really amazing. You know, there's just the three of them on the stage, the two Gallagher brothers on bass and guitar, and they look old now, but they don't half move. They don't half exactly as they used to. And they played, a lot of the hits that you've heard on, you know, all the early albums, a few new tracks, and really, again, a band that really looked like they were really enjoying themselves. So really enjoyed them. And then Girls' School came on and played what Girls' School do. You know, they were playing a lot of the old hits that they had from the 80s. I didn't see the whole show. I actually left. I had to leave because I had to get a train home, and obviously there were four bands on. So I only saw about half their set, which was a bit of a shame because I was enjoying them as well. So it was a really cheap gig.
Right.
Saw four bands. I came home thinking, I really want to see that again. So if there's any small bands out there that want to club together and do that sort of thing, it's a really good thing to do. So that, I saw that gig in February, but I'll pass the baton over to you before I mention any more and see what you've seen.
Yeah, interesting that you leave things off with that last bit there, you know, that you'd be interested in seeing that bill or something similar to that for that price point. The last show that we saw back in May, I believe it was May at this point, yes, was Marky Ramone's Blitzkrieg, who's coming back around in November. Mm. And I told my wife, I said, you know, they're playing 45 minutes away. We enjoyed that show, but would we want to see that show again? You know, would you be willing to pay 35 euros per person to see him do the same exact set list, do all the same shit that we just saw, and it'll probably be a bigger crowd, and so it'll be slightly different. And she said to me, she said, well, I think that's one of those shows where you see them once and you kind of get your fill. I go, okay, I can go either way. That's fine. So yeah, it was Marky Ramone. There was an opener that was a national act. Marky was clearly the headliner because once he came on stage, the venue filled out with people. He's obviously the drummer. He's extremely old. He's still playing a lot of the parts like he used to. I mean, none of these songs are being played at half, you know, or half the pace than what they were before. It was a great show. It was an energetic show. It was exactly what I expected and what I wanted. I have seen the Ramones in concert, and I have to say this was probably better than seeing them, only because it seemed like Joey and Johnny Ramone just wanted to get the hell out of the venue and wrap up as soon as possible. So Joey's vocals, for the most part, were illegible. Now, with this show, they're singers from here in Spain. So it was interesting to see him interact with the crowd and say some things. It was funny because my wife at first says to me, what's he saying? You know, he has to be from the area to know about that specific term that he's saying. And afterwards somebody said, yeah, he's from like 2 hours away. He's from part of the Basque Country and he's been in like a million bands. So he knows how to, you know, talk up a crowd. So that made a lot of sense. Well, it was a cool show. It was 37 songs in 90 minutes. I sung along to 35 of the 37. And it was cool. It was really good. I hope that they end up, you know, coming back around here. And 40 minutes isn't that far away. But I hope that they continue bringing shows around similar to that to the venue where we went to see.
Whereabouts was that show then? What was the place called? Where was that?
Okay, so the place translated into English, in Spanish, it's called Escenario Santander, which is Santander Stage, basically. So this is a, they built a park where a bunch of marshland was. Okay, and in part of that park, they built a venue. And the venue probably holds, I mean, I would think if you max it out, 2,000 people, maybe. I'll have to look it up. But it's kind of set up cool to which, if it's a big show and the weather's good, the entire back of the venue opens up, so that you can potentially play out to a bunch of people sitting in the grass and part of the park. I don't know that they've done that before, but it is possible. This venue has had Inve Malmsteen in the past. It's had Dio Disciples. Nashville Pussy played there recently. Gunn played there recently. They have all types of tribute bands that are playing there. I think it's a cool venue, not only because it's 20 minutes away from my house, but again, the prices are fairly good and the atmosphere is good for shows, especially in a place that really isn't a rock music place. The drinks are kind of expensive, but you know, nothing compares to, I'm sure, drinks in London or drinks in the US. So
yeah, it's interesting.
So to hear people say, yeah, it's three drinks for $10. I'm like, yeah, in the States you're probably paying $15 for one beer. So
yeah. Was there any support with that act, or was it just
there? It was a national act there was one guy jumping around for the band. He was probably a friend of the band. I don't recall their name. I do remember they sang, I believe, in Spanish, English, and in Basque. So whenever you do anything in Basque in my province, it's like the proverbial fart in church. So not too many people are keen with it. So yeah.
Sounds a good gig. Sounds good.
Yeah. It was fun.
Cool. Well, I could
What other shows? Go ahead. What other shows did you see outside of the one that you just mentioned?
Yeah. I'm going to leave the best one till last, the one I saw in March, which might have this band involved. So I'll nip to May, where I saw an AC/DC tribute act in my local town. I've seen them before. They're called Livewire AC/DC. And they are extremely good. If you cannot afford to see AC/DC and you haven't, you know, obviously they don't play very often either. They're on tour at the moment. They will be playing a few dates in the UK. But obviously it's really expensive to see AC/DC now, and they're not the full band. We've talked about this before, you know, and we've seen the clips on various online places. So they're a great band. They play a lot of the hits, but they played a few deep cuts as well this time. The Angus Young guy really plays Angus Young properly. I mean, he's a bit tall. Right. He's a bit taller than Angus, and he looks younger as well now that Angus is all white and, you know, gray. But they're fantastic, this time they only had a Brian Johnson singer. Normally, I've seen them. They sometimes have, you know, they have two singers, or they have the one singer who does both. You know, he'll sort of change and he plays both. But it was just Brian Johnson. But he was really like him. Had the T-shirt on, and he had the cap on, and he had the Geordie accent. And it was a really, really enjoyable evening. Took a few people locally who'd not seen them before, and they really thought they sounded like them. And again, cheap gig. I think it was no more than probably £15 to see them. Wow. They're on for a couple of hours, and at the end they have a couple of little cannons they fire off, just like the real AC/DC. It's great. Right. Really great. The Malcolm Young as well looks fantastic. I mean, he looks like Malcolm Young as well. You know, he's got everything down to what Malcolm was like. So it's a really good tribute, and it's a tribute to people who have died in the band, you know, which is another thing. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. And I think there is a room, you know, for some tribute acts. Some of them are not very good, but some of them are really good. And, you know, if you get to see one. I am actually going to see another one this Friday. I'm going to see Limehouse Lizzy again, which I've seen before, you know, a Thin Lizzy tribute band. And they're really good as well. They even have it so they've got a lead singer bassist who is black, just like Phil Lynott. Wow. So, you know, the attention to detail is amazing. Yeah. So, yeah, enjoyed AC/DC Livewire. Really good.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point because I've mentioned this several times. I've been in a tribute band in the past, and some musicians don't care for the whole tribute gig because their argument is, well, I'm not being allotted shows or I'm not selling albums, but this tribute band is helping push copies of such and such a band. Again, they're consuming up nights where they'd like to be doing shows. I've never had, even before I was in a tribute band, I never had an issue with it because I think that they're always honoring the legacy of the bands that they're basically imitating. There have been times where I've seen some of these bands where it's been god awful. I think I mentioned this to you where we had a Michael Schenker tribute come through and hearing them sing, I don't remember if it was Ready to Rock or what it was. Anyway, the lyrics were not legible. The playing was great. The musicianship was awesome, but the lead singer was just scatting scat in Spanish, basically. So what was not good. So obviously you don't have an issue with tribute bands. A lot of times too, similar to what you said, some of these bands no longer tour or don't come close enough to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't have an issue with so long as they do it well, I don't have an issue with people doing tribute bands or being cover bands, because people a lot of times want to go out, want to see things they're familiar with, let's say. And it can help open up your horizon to bands that maybe you've never heard of. A lot of times we neglect to remember that not everyone is a music nerd like we are, you know? So,
yeah.
Again, obviously you've gone to see a few tribute bands in the past. Do you have an issue with bands doing that?
I don't have an issue with them at all, because the first thing is, obviously, if you don't want to see the tribute band, you don't have to go. If you want to go and see the real band and you want to save your money up and go and see the real band, that's fine. If you want to see the real band and the tribute band, that's fine. And if you just don't want to see the tribute band, don't want to see the real band because it's too expensive, it's far away. Right. And as you say, they may be dead. They may not be here. They may not be touring anymore. I mean, I've just recently, I say recently, last year I saw a Kiss tribute band. And obviously Kiss, mm-hmm. I'm never going to see live again. They will have that Avatar situation, which they're going to bring out. And I may want to go and see it, who knows. But, you know, to actually see some guys dressed up and playing Kiss songs and having, you know, a fun time, and it's only costing me £15 or whatever it was, why wouldn't I want to do that just for, you know, an evening out? Right. You don't have to judge them based on the original band either. You can judge them based on, you know, they're doing a good job of it. And if they play the hits, they play the hits. If they play a few deep cuts, they do that. You know, there's lots of different angles to it. As you say, some bands are not very good. I've seen a Queen tribute band that really wasn't very good. but, you know, I won't go and see them again. But it won't put me off going to see other tribute bands. Limehouse Lizzie, I'm going to see on Friday. I've seen them about four times before, and they are absolutely like Thin Lizzy. So, right. And who's going to see Thin Lizzy anymore? I mean, first of all, where is John Sykes? He's not here. and neither is, a few of the other band members. And, of course, Phil sadly is departed. So it's never going to really happen. We've heard about maybe Scott Gorham going on the road and doing it again, but it's not happened yet. So, yeah, I'm in favor of it. It's a cheap night out for people. And like you say, that's a good point. It gets people into music. And that's always a good thing. People will always go back to the back catalogues once they've watched a band. I do it. You probably do it as well. You come home after the gig, you start going through all the old albums again and thinking, oh, I remember that song, but what's the rest of the album like? And I think a lot of people do that. And that's why the bands themselves like tribute bands of themselves, because they know they're going to sell albums through it as well.
Right. And they technically get a kickback as well. So, I mean, it's them making a little extra money without not really having to do much.
Yeah. Yeah. But there you go.
Yeah. I never understood when Scott Gorham left Black Star Riders. That's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That that his first thing was, oh, but I'm going to, you know, I'm bringing Thin Lizzy back. And my thought was like, really? Like, what lineup? Who, you know? Because the last lineup had essentially the guys that are in Black Star Riders. Plus, they had Troy Sanders on bass. And I thought, as much as I love Troy and as much as he loves Thin Lizzy, it just seemed like an odd pairing for me. Also, has Scott looked well to you?
Yeah. No, he's an old guy now, isn't he? I mean, he's quite old.
Right. But he's always seemed older than his actual age because of all the substance abuse issues that he had.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, maybe he's had enough. Yeah.
So it was just odd, you know, to me. It was like, okay, well, he's leaving BSR. He's probably going to chill out and just take advantage of whatever time he has left. No, I'm bringing Thin Lizzy back. Really? Okay.
He's also doing a lot of art at the moment. He's touring his own personal art in the UK. So that's one thing he's doing. But yeah, he did mention about who he'd actually have in Thin Lizzy. I think he did say he was going to talk to Brian Downey. Obviously, Darren Wharton's around because he's in that other band, isn't he? Dare. And he's still touring. So there's a couple there. And in the past, he's had Marco Mendoza on bass as well. So, who knows? Maybe they'll do summer gigs next year. That's the sort of thing that they might do, you know, just do a few one-offs. There's quite a few UK festivals here where they could headline with a Thin Lizzy act.
And they'll make a good amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, they were going to do it through COVID. During the COVID year, I think they got cancelled. I was actually going to go and see them because they were going to do one near me. It was a funny kind of show as well because it wasn't just a rock or metal festival. It was one of those that, you know, had a lot of pop acts on, various other stuff. They were going to do a headline there.
Yeah, he's had some interesting lineups. He's had Vivian Campbell, like I said, Troy Sanders. You mentioned Marco Mendoza. A lot of big time players that I don't know, just odd seeing them fit into what they're doing within Lizzy, but obviously they've left a mark on a lot of people.
He's obviously spending a bit of time looking for John Sykes because that will take a lot of time.
That's probably consuming all of his time. Okay, so what is the mystery show from March that you went to?
Yeah, so I finally got a ticket, and I was very lucky, really. The show was pretty sold out, and I was kept looking and looking, and eventually I managed to get a ticket on the fourth row, on the right at the front, in the middle, a single ticket to see Judas Priest in Birmingham. So that was fantastic. It was at the Birmingham World Resort Arena, which used to be the NEC. It's obviously a hometown gig for Priest. You know, it's fantastic big arena. And I was really excited, really looking forward to this. And it didn't let me down at all because they were supported, obviously, by Saxon and Uriah Heep as well. So Uriah Heep came on first. He played about seven songs. Mick Box obviously has been around since the Middle Ages, so he knows what he's doing. They really sounded good, Uriah Heep. They certainly hadn't dulled their sound or, you know, muffled it in any way. And I went to the toilets after, and there was a guy in front of me who was a similar age, and he just looked round at me and said, "That was good, wasn't it?" And I said, yeah, it was great. And they were really good support act. So they were on, and then Saxon came on and did, probably about an hour or so of a set. They obviously have Brian Tatler on guitar now, and he fit into the band really well. He's obviously the same era, the same age. So he knows the Saxon songs. So they played a lot of the hits. They played about four songs off the new album. They played Roswell. They played the title track. They played 1066, and they played Madame Guillotine. They were all played really well. They all sounded like they did on the album. Biff's voice was brilliant. They finally got all the crowd around me to stand up, because they'd been sitting down for Uriah Heep. You know, there's quite an old crowd on the floor bit, you can imagine. I was standing up straight away from Saxon start, and I was kind of like the only one on my own at the front, near the front. And then eventually people started standing up a bit more and enjoying it. So yeah, Saxon sounded great. They really always put on a good show, and really, you know, got the crowd going with all the hits, you know, the usual stuff, Wheels of Steel, all that kind of stuff. And then Judas Priest came on, and I was very impressed by them. I'd seen them, you know, three, four, maybe five times before over the years, you know, over a long time. And Rob Halford was looking in good form. I thought he was better than when I last saw him. When I last saw him, he'd only just recovered from his cancer. So we know that would have really hit him a lot. This time I thought he was, he still looked old, but I thought he moved a little bit better. He was singing was amazing. And I don't know whether it was helped a lot by, that we know all the bands get a little bit of help with everything nowadays, but I think that, you know, his singing was amazing. And I thought that the guitarists really gelled together much better this time as well. Whereas the first time I saw them, Andy Sneap was, you know, fairly new to the band. But this time I thought the two of them were really on song. And at the end, Glenn Tipton came on for three songs. He's not a well man. I mean, they were holding him before, you know, side on the side before he came on, and he sort of, you know, he looked as if he enjoyed it, but he can't move very well. He's very slow. It's taken its toll, Parkinson's disease now on him. But it was a great show. They had a great backdrop. They played a lot of hits. Again, they played some new songs off the new album, which were, you know, sounded really great. And everybody left the show with smiles on their faces and, you know, really had a nice time. Great to see them. You never know if it's the last time with a band like that, because, you know, you just don't know. So if it was, great way to go out. But if it isn't, I'll be looking forward to seeing them again.
What was the breakdown and who played how long? You mentioned that Uriah Heep.
So this is from memory, because it's now back in March. But Uriah Heep were probably on for about 35 minutes, that sort of time. Okay. I think Saxon were on for probably about, they were on for an hour, at least an hour, and maybe an hour and 10, you know, around that sort of time. And Priest were on for probably an hour and three quarters.
Okay.
Which
is almost 2 hours for Priest. That's interesting. Okay. And it's interesting. The other times, you know, Saxon getting an hour, I'm trying to think of when I saw them previously, the order was Saxon, Motorhead, Priest. Mm. So it's interesting that Saxon was the second band on the bill there. And also, I'm guessing that with Uriah Heep, they're probably flip-flopping who's the opener, who's the middle act.
Well, no, not in this case. No, Uriah Heep were actually set to be the opener on all of these gigs. And there's a good reason for that, actually, in the UK, is that Saxon are the bigger band. Uriah Heep do appeal to the sort of slightly older crowd now, you know, fans who are probably in their 60s and 70s, whereas, you know, Saxon are still appealing to sort of my age group, which is sort of, you know, 50s. Because it's the time period you kind of got into the band, I guess. Right. But I would say definitely Saxon are a much bigger band than Uriah Heep in the UK. And that's sort of validated by the chart placing for the album as well, which got into the, you know, into the UK charts.
Cool. That's Listen, they've always had a following. I'm not the hugest fan of the band, but I've recognized their following because I know a lot of people that are into them. And just deserved. I've seen them 2-3 times in concert, I believe, but never because I paid to see them, just because they just happened to be on the festival bill. So
yeah.
You have what seemed like sunny skies up to recently, and I have what sounds like rolling thunderstorms coming through my head.
Right, yeah. Yeah. It's a European problem, I think, that sometimes in the summer, isn't it?
I got it. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so the only other show that I've seen this year, really not metal, really not hard rock, I do think that this band has immensely influenced a lot of hard rock and metal bands through their lyrics, through their dark imagery, through working with Anton Corbin, who Metallica later did. It was Depeche Mode. It was a band that was a bucket list for me. I didn't think we'd end up seeing them. We had tickets years ago and never went because we had a dog that had been poisoned. So, you know, we kind of didn't feel right about going to see the show. It was a great show. It was exactly what I would expect from them. Just the whole production, the songs that they picked were great. They pretty much played all eras of the band. They played almost one song per album. Certain albums got more than one. And their new album, they had 4 or 5 songs that they played with. They led off with 3 new songs. So, I mean, and that's, I think, what it should be. You should be proud of the music that you just recorded. It shouldn't be a throwaway just to get people to buy products. No, I think you should stand behind that, those tracks and play them, you know? So yeah, I wish other bands would take notice. Obviously Iron Maiden has, with them playing 3 19 minute songs now.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. I've always felt that they've kind of crossed over into rock. They have some overtones with guitar driven songs and with stuff that isn't exactly dancey as some people would know them for. I know that bands have covered them within the hard rock and metal community. So that's why I'm confident to say that, you know, it's not that far off from what we normally listen to. It is, but it really isn't. Mm.
It's an interesting point you make, really, because when I was younger, obviously Depeche Mode were with that sort of new romantic movement of the 80s. Right. But obviously they've released much heavier material, really, more rockier material over the years. But there may be people who've not really got into that because they've really sort of seen them as a different type of act altogether. And interesting, was that it probably was the case live that they come across as a different type of act than the one that was, you know, off the 80s, I guess.
Well, I think a lot of people would be surprised. I'm not surprised because I follow the band and I have, I don't know how many Blu-rays and DVDs. But they play live. They, you know, I know that some people have said to me, oh, well, you know, it's all taped or it's whatever. I'm like, well, whether it is or not, it seems like they're playing their instruments and that they're doing it well. They've always, from Violator onward, maybe it's Songs of Faith and Devotion, they've always kind of performed as a band. After who was it? I want to say Andy Fletcher, but Andy Fletcher's the guy that just passed away. Let's see, band members. It is Alan Wilder. When Alan Wilder left in 95, they added a permanent drummer to the band. They also added a third keyboard player, basically. And now that Andy Fletcher passed away, he's become the second keyboard player. So, I mean, for the most part, they were a four-piece. I don't think they had any backing vocalists. I don't recall them having it, but maybe that could be my old man brain not remembering it at the moment. Yeah, they have a special bond with the crowd too, especially now that it's my t-shirt that I picked up is just Dave Gahan and Martin Gore. So yeah, and even with that, I mean, you listen to something like that we've heard a million times over, something like Personal Jesus is a blues guitar part mixed into that. He does plenty of slide guitar, not anything that's really fancy, but just to accent songs. Yeah, I think it's helped endear them to a larger audience, and their lyrics definitely have. And again, when Songs of Faith and Devotion came out, people went apeshit. This is a rock album. It isn't, you know, a pop album. And they've kind of meandered the line for the last few albums. Hell, Delta Machine was recorded down in New Orleans, and it was a heavily guitar-driven album. I mean, there's no shredding on it per se, but definitely a lot of guitar being used throughout the album.
Yeah. And presumably it was a packed arena there, was it? I mean, where was it actually played at?
It was in Bilbao, Spain at the Bilbao Expo Center. I've been there for Priest. I've been there for Priest. For Priest, Saxon, and Motorhead.
So this is a big arena there.
It's fairly big. For Depeche Mode, I believe there was 12,000 people there.
So it's a decent crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw Priest there, it was around 8,000.
Yeah.
So they had several sections roped off. With Depeche Mode, they only had the section closest to the stage closed off. Everything else had people in.
So it shows how popular an act like that is now. Really popular. Yeah, because they've sort of renewed the way they do stuff all the time as well. That's the thing. Yeah, and producing good music. I'm producing good music.
Right, and that's the thing with you know, I talk about lazy listeners all the time. There's plenty of lazy musicians that tour after tour, they just play the same material. So why are you going to go out and see them? Whereas, again, Depeche Mode is playing 4 to 5 new tracks every show. Plus, they're rotating their album, you know, their classics in and out of the set list as well. So I think that they know how to work their crowd. They know how to work their craft to the point where they're continuing to sell tickets year after year because of that, because you're seeing a different show every time, because you're hearing different songs all the time. That's definitely a that's definitely something that they do well and they do right.
Yeah. And on this show, you always promote smaller bands. So let's hear about the support act as well. Was there a support band?
There was not.
There wasn't. Okay. All right.
The intro was just a few minutes of a repetitive, like, dance beat.
Okay. So how long were they on for then? They must have been on quite a while.
It was like 2 hours.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it was what I expected. You know, I know that in the past they've played longer, but I mean, I wasn't expecting them to do more than that. The show also marked my kids' first shows, and also my oldest was there with a broken leg.
Yes.
So that was a challenge. I started coming down with some sort of virus, so some stomach bug while at that show. So close to the end of the show, I was not feeling good at all. I was very worn down. So I'll remember it for that as well. But overall, it was a great experience for everyone that went, at least from this household.
Yeah, we've all been at those shows, haven't we, when we've not felt well and we've not wanted to go. And yeah, you need to go because you have those memories that will last forever, and you've got the ticket stub and whatever else. And just the memories of the show. And
yeah. I agree.
That sounds great.
Agree 100%. What other shows are you looking forward to seeing this year?
Yeah, well, I was hoping to maybe nip down to London to see a couple of shows, but I didn't manage to do it in the end. Really strange, because ZZ Top and Scorpions both played, or I know Scorpions have played. I think ZZ Top is coming up. Just one show in the UK this year, and they're just doing London. So it's very difficult to get tickets. It's difficult to get down there. So I would have really, you know, enjoyed seeing those two, but it's not to be this year. I have got a ticket, though, to see The Cult in October. And they're playing, I think it's like a sort of 40-year review of their hits over the years. So I'm hoping they're going to play proper hits that, you know, we really want to hear by them. And as you know, they've just done the Southern Death Cult tour, which I didn't see because I wasn't really into all the very early stuff, which they did. So I'm looking forward to this. And obviously I'm going to Manchester. It's a hometown gig for Billy Duffy, who's a Man City fan, as you know. So it's going to be great. Really looking forward to that. My wife's actually coming as well because she likes The Cult. We don't often go to a lot of rock gigs together now, but she's quite excited by that one as well. So October. I think it's October. It might be November, but anyway, it's later in the year. Looking forward to that one. And then maybe, here we go. There's something there. There he is. Looking cool. Yeah.
Halo. Well, yeah, you could see him better there.
Fine. He's a great guitarist, and he's a cool guy. So they should be good. The Cult. As for others, I mean, I'd love to see some other bands. Whether they're going to come over or not is another thing. I've never seen Accept, and I've got a feeling that I will see them one day. I'm hoping, you know, over the next 12 months, I might get to see them. They occasionally come over here. But we've got this little thing called Brexit going on, and some bands are a little bit reluctant to sort of, you know, they go on European tours and then they think, oh no, we won't go to the UK. So I don't know whether I'll see them again. I don't think it's going to be this year, but you know, next year I'd love to see the very final Ozzy Osbourne show in Birmingham, which is being planned, I think, for next summer, but we'll see how that, you know, how Ozzy gets on with that. That would be good. Just thinking, who else? I think Richie Kotzen is touring. I'd like to maybe go and see him. Oh, and there is one other that I haven't got the ticket yet, but I am going to go and see. I just remembered. Jeff Tate's touring in October.
Oh, wow.
And it's in the same place I saw that new album show that I mentioned in February. So it's in a really small place. It's quite reasonably priced. He's got a female singer on as the support act, and I think he's going to play quite a bit off, obviously, all the, you know, the Queensryche stuff. So, yeah, that would be a good night out, I think. What about yourself?
Cool. Yeah, so I pulled the trigger on the Loserville show, which is Limp Bizkit with Corey Haim and a few other acts. I set up a playlist with all of the acts that are going to be playing, and for some options for other shows that we were possibly considering going to see. And ultimately, after speaking to you guys and also speaking to my wife, you know, we figured, all right, well, I can sit through some of these other acts so my son gets to live out his dream of seeing Limp Bizkit. So, so we'll do it. Yeah. It'll be the second time I see them.
Okay.
While we're in the States, we may also see there's a package of Bush playing with,
wait a minute. Wait a minute. Before you get onto the US, tell us when this Limp Bizkit show is and where it is.
It's in the US.
Oh, it right. Okay.
Yeah, it is July 30th.
July 30th, right. Okay, great. That's brilliant. So which arena, where's that going to be? Do you know?
It's going to be at the PNC Bank Art Center. It is a outdoor amphitheater.
Right. Okay, great. Brilliant.
Yeah. And at that same venue, they're going to have, again, Bush with Jerry Cantrell and Candlebox.
Wow.
And that's another show that we were contemplating going to, and we may still do, because the prices aren't that bad, that terribly bad, considering how many bands you're seeing. Mm. Also, I'd love for my older son to see a band while we're there, you know, continue growing his concert going experience.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah. Do you think you might see one in London? I know you're coming over to London later in the year, or do you think that's going to be probably unlikely given the fact that you've only got a few days, I suppose?
Yeah, it's going to come down to time and money, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see The Cult, but they're playing, I believe, right after we're going to be there.
Yeah. There's always lots of smaller gigs going on in London. I mean, there's, you know, stuff going on in pubs and smaller venues. So I suppose there might be something on that might tempt you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something that's in the works or that we're contemplating, because obviously we want to see a lot of the sites in London, a lot of the different things that we've only read about and seen, you know, on TV or on the net. Mm. There's also other things like possibility of going to a concert in my case. I told my wife that we're going to be in three different countries in a short period of months, and I've been trying to swing it so that I could get a tattoo in each country. And she hasn't been all that keen on the idea as of yet, but she wasn't keen on me getting one that I got at this point 10 days ago. So, and then right before, she goes, well, you know, go ahead and get it, you know? So I did. And then afterwards is when I started to say, well, you know, I've mentioned this to you. I've spoken to some tattoo artists, and I may be doing a series of interviews where we talk about the crossover between music and getting tattooed. And I said, you know, obviously I'll have to get tattooed at this stuff. So we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep an eye out what's going on during the time you're here, and I'll let you know if there's anything that might be worth your time and, you know, is within a reasonable price, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. There's always loads going on, so you never know. There might be just something you might be able to see of an evening, even for a couple of hours.
Absolutely. Yeah, I still have to speak to you more about some of the things to see. So.
Yeah, sure.
But and the year it sucks because the year is shaping out to be a great concert year as well. Seeing a lot of tours that are going to be going on in the States in the fall, right after we come back. For example, same venue where we're going to see the one show, you have Alice Cooper with Rob Zombie. I'm not the biggest fan of either, but it would have been a show that I would have gone to.
Yeah.
Gladly, because I think they both put on great shows. So it would have been something really, really good to check out. There are a bunch of other bands that are going to be out there as well. Different tours that keep coming up that I've seen and immediately so-and-so announces a tour and I'm like, oh, let's see the dates. Oh, it's in September. We're gone by.
Yeah. There's a couple of others I'm thinking. I mean, you just mentioned Alice Cooper. He's actually playing over here in Manchester later in the year. I forget who he's supported by on that one. I think it's Cheap Trick. Yeah. I think it's Alice Cooper and Cheap Trick. And also, Journey are playing later in the year. As you know, I'm a big fan of Journey. I like a lot of their stuff, so that would be fun. But the problem is the price of the concerts. Those sort of concerts are quite pricey, particularly Journey. Right. You know, you're looking at the sort of 160 mark, so it's pricey stuff. So you're kind of looking around. I mean, you go further back in the arena, you know, it's a bit cheaper. But this is the thing, you're always balancing up the price and the fun.
Have you seen them before?
Yeah, I've seen them a few times. I've seen them three times, and the best time I saw them was with Foreigner and Styx, which was a really, really good show. They were really on form then. Obviously, I've only ever seen them with the newest singer now. Is it Arnel Pineda? Only seen them with him, but they've always played the hits. They've always played quite a few tracks off their current album, whatever it is at the time, because I think they've done three with him now, haven't they? So I've seen each of those three tours, I think. They've always been great live, and Neil Sean is a really, really good act live, really good. I mean, he can't off play, so yeah, they're worth seeing. But once I actually saw them with Whitesnake, and actually Whitesnake blew them off the stage before they came on, which is a bit of a shame. They should have swapped it around. Everybody wants to see Whitesnake because it was a UK act, and then Journey came on after. There's a lot of people leaving the arena, which is a real shame because Journey are very good, but they just felt a little bit flat after Whitesnake, whereas if they'd done it the other way around, it would have been absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw them at a festival where they were, you know, after they played, Dream Theater came on, and there were other things like Hatebreed and Suicidal Tendencies that played after them. So it was an amazing mix of just different styles of rock and metal. And they brought it that night. They didn't play any ballads. It was all, you know, the rock songs. I think they knew. They said, all right, we got to win this crowd over. And we're not going to do it with Send Her My Love. You know, so they played a lot of songs that are not only radio hits, but staples. I would say not only staples of theirs, but just staples in all types of rock and pop culture, because we've seen their music appear on different series and movies and whatnot. So, they're definitely a band that's transcended a lot of different things, and it's cool that they have the headspace to know, okay, we can't pander to our usual crowd here. We got to do something special for these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that really helps. And it really helps when you see a band live that you're not so into on record, but you just see them live and you think, hell, I get it now. You know, they're a great live act, and they do it well. And that's, you know, that's all you can ask.
Absolutely. So, You know who else does it well? Jeremy Weltman does it well. And I do need to thank him for joining me tonight for another great discussion here on Signals from Mars. I want to thank anyone that's watching or listening to the replay of this. I do want to thank you for your support. Make sure to go to signalsfrommars.com and check out all the links to how you can follow or support the show. And that is it. On that note, we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.